Peter Feynman, Kevin Hall, Elliot Bernstein, Bill Stansberry. 11:16. Peter.
Yes.
How are you?
Good.
Good. You got Bill on?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I'm going to get Kevin on. Hold on, guys. Okay, hold on. I'm going to connect us all as soon as my little dot appears. Okay, is everybody there?
We're here. Peter, hello. I just got to ask you folks to give me about 15 seconds because I had a call that came in on the other line. I'll be right back. No worries. Thank you.
So, Peter, did you finally get a candidate out there yet?
And it's very good for the Republican Party that we have so many what I consider to be well-qualified candidates. In the speech I gave to the group on Saturday, I hearkened back to 1996 when I was in Orlando for the convention up there as we tried to pick a candidate. Maybe it was 95, but the 96 election cycle. And our choices were Bob Dole, Lamar Alexander, Steve Forbes, and Senator Phil Graham from Texas.
Wow.
And so I thought, boy, compared to that, our choices are a lot better. We've got a lot of great candidates. And everybody brings something good to the table.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of candidates. Is Trump still out there at the head?
Elliot, you're pinging to me. I'm not sure if you're pinging to Peter or not, but I'm only picking up every couple of words. You're catching him, okay, Pete?
I am.
Okay.
I'm
watching you, Peter.
Can you guys hear me? I can.
Okay, good. I can hear Peter perfectly. I can hear Bill perfectly. Elliot was pinging a little bit to me, too.
Okay, I'm going to be quiet anyways, Kevin, so you can take it away and talk to Peter. I know he's on a tight schedule. He just got back from his Republican parties, and he's got a hangover.
Okay. I'm fine. Well, I wanted to first say thank you to both of you, actually, and thank you, Peter, thank you, Bill. Part of, what we were trying to do is just figure out other ways where, we can move forward together on certain issues and try to get some traction. So that was one of the reasons, just to kind of reach out in that regard. And then was curious, Peter, if you've had many thoughts about, the 15th. Well, the 15th, I guess. Are you even in on the 15th, or?
I am. My understanding is I'm not part of the 15th. But are you talking about December 15th?
Yeah, December 15th, yep.
I don't even have anything on my calendar for that day.
Okay. And that's what that, and I guess that's, just somewhere I'm kind of confused as to how everything went down because Phillips seemed to only take one thing and he took Alan Rose's thing. And it's supposed to be a construction, but it's a construction in Shirley, not Simon.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Very, kind of bizarre, I thought, how that kind of came about.
Completely bizarre.
Yeah, and I'm just kind of curious, you being in Florida for as long as you have and all the practice experience, I mean, how did a Florida trial, I'm assuming they kind of consider that a trial, right? It's marked as a trial. But I just know from New York's experience, you have all these sort of pretrial hearings where, you know, you've had a hearing to look at all the pleadings and make sure the pleadings are, you know, certified and conform copies, and of course you already have your discovery, you know, determined before it even gets to that trial calendar. So just the whole thing to me, it's just, and I don't know Florida at all, but it's just bizarre. So I'm just curious if, you know, if you had a minute or two just to talk about how the way things typically do go and what's supposed to happen.
Yeah, the normal course of events is the judge sends out an order setting cause for trial and sets a matter on a trial docket, and then, which is normally 60 to 120 days out, the court then sends out, in that order is contained discovery cutoff deadlines, motion cutoff deadlines, deadlines for disclosing witness and exhibit lists, deadlines for pretrial motions, then also sets a calendar call, and which is usually a week before when the docket commences. The docket is usually about 4 to 6 weeks long. And then at the calendar call, you get assigned a specific day or days on that docket when you can expect to be called to trial.
Okay.
That's how it normally works. Now, the Shirley Bernstein case, I have no idea what's going on because I haven't been involved in that whatsoever. Because Bill and I don't have a dog in that fight, and those issues are wholly separate and apart from any issues involving Simon Bernstein, who died years later and whose new documents were executed at a different time under different circumstances. So the Shirley Bernstein case has no bearing on, nor can it adversely affect any claims or issues that we have in the Simon Bernstein estate or trust matters.
Okay. But as far as what you described, you know, in terms of process and all that, that actually,
if you want my honest opinion, I don't know why Elliot, I don't know why you even filed that case, because
I didn't. Alan Rose did.
That goes back.
Alan Rose
was. That goes back to a time when Shirley was still alive. Now, if you're saying that after Shirley died, they changed Shirley's trust documents.
That's what we're saying.
And that's a different matter, but it still has no bearing on Simon.
Well, I guess the only thing that confuses me there, you know, as far as what I understand, and I'm not going to say I understand everything, and Bill, I know that, you know, we've talked about this a little bit, which is if those 2008 wills and trusts were supposed to mirror each other, and Bill was the trustee in Simon's, then, you know, why not the trustee in Shirley's, you know, and was that part of the fraud and the change that took place, right?
Well, from what I understand in talking to Bill, Bill's relationship with Simon and Simon's relationship with Bill and Ted was totally different from Shirley's relationship with Bill and Shirley's relationship with Ted. I'm not sure that they were supposed to mirror each other.
Well, Don Tesher said that in his statements, and Alan Rose has echoed it. And Cy did all the, just so you know, my mom and dad, my mom didn't even look at the document where she said, he said, sign, she signed. And those things that my dad did in estate planning as probably, you know, one of the smartest guys on the block in it, was done by my father. So my mother wouldn't have been asked, do you want Ted? And the last person in the world she would have picked after just making him deceased for all purposes of the trust would be Ted. So, you know, those arguments are going to prevail, I think, as to this, you know, being more of frauded documents, including the fact, Peter, that if that was the way the nature of the documents was, they would have turned them over day one, not waited till I had to go get an attorney 2 months later and then took them in. So, you know, that whole argument, and I'm not sure it doesn't affect Cy, by the way, the Shirley Trust, because they're claiming that the Shirley Trust assets are going to Cy and being paid out to Cy's 10 grandchildren through the Simon Trust.
Right, and I thought, Bill, that you had, you know, mentioned that you thought the original, you know, 2008 stuff was supposed to mirror itself. You saw it would mirror itself. I thought that's what you said, but if I'm misquoting you, I apologize. But what I recall is what Elliot said, that Don Fesher, who drafted the document, said they were in Mirovich Trust. Remembering also that Simon was the successor trustee, Shirley's trust, when she passed away. Why would Simon redo his trust in 2012, July? Why would he redo that and name Fesher and Selena as his successor trustees and personal representative for his estate, yet allow the Shirley Trust that he was trustee of to go with Ted as the successor? That makes no sense.
Well, that was already a done deal, though, because she was dead in 2010, so you couldn't change that.
No, but that's not what Bill's saying.
Simon, the successor trustee, the Shirley's Trust?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. They both got...
I've never really looked at Shirley's Trust.
But yes, that's...
Dr. Elliott, do you recall?
Yeah, that's correct.
It was a trust created for Shirley's benefit. I think she was the trustee, and Simon was the...
Successor
trustee,
Yeah, that is correct. In both cases.
That was Elliot?
Yeah.
Elliot?
Yeah.
Wake up, Elliot.
I'm here. Yes, I recall that exactly as the way that Simon was his successor. I'm sorry I had you muted because there was a lawnmower. So I was a little late in my response, but I was saying it. So that's how it was, Bill. In both cases, Cy and Shirley. The successors were Cy and Shirley.
But doesn't Simon can Cy as the successor? But wouldn't Cy have the ability to change his successor in Shirley's trust or not?
Yes, no. No, he would not have the ability to do that. The only thing he could do is resign as trustee, successor trustee. But other than that,
But he would have put Ted, if he wanted Ted there, he would have put Ted there. You know, not Spleen and Tesher. Colin rejected him twice. The fact is he's not capable of serving now, and the truth is those trust documents are about as bogus as the other 7,000 pages that I'm about to claim are all fraudulent from Tesher and Spleena. Every single document they didn't produce to the court but produced to us.
Well, and the other thing, Elliot, that I shared with you from the beginning is that I happened to see Simon and Shirley's initials on enough things over the years that I was there that there's no way in this world that SB on Shirley's papers were signed by Shirley.
Yeah.
The initials are not Shirley.
It's all fraud,
you're
Peter.
You're going to need an expert handwriting.
Peter, I know all the things I need that I can't get, and they know that too, but, you know, that's not what I'm going after. Meaning, the actual fact, Peter, is the court, who has aided and abetted this fraud through allowing Tesher and Spleena to put fraudulent documents into the court continuously after they were found committing fraud, is all a big old fraud. And so, you know, these things are all going to be knocked out. There's not an issue of, you know, us moving the court to follow the proper procedure for a trial here. The court has caused a massive fraud. They're all involved. I mean, it's obvious what's gone down. And they should be stopping. I mean, the actual fact that Phillips is scheduling this hearing with a fourth DCA appeal of everything, all Colon's orders, and he's moving on Colon's orders, makes him a criminal. And I'm going to charge his ass with it. And Colon, and all of them.
Elliot.
Okay,
Since we only have limited time here, what he's been sharing is actually very helpful, for my general understanding, so I can focus on that a little bit. Because what you laid out, Peter, is pretty similar to what happens in New York as far as having dates for, dispositive motions and deadlines for discovery, and then having like your trial ready date. So in general, it sounds like it is kind of similar. I mean, maybe there's some differences here and there. So any sense like, when Phillips, why he didn't kind of go through that? I mean, on that day that he was setting this thing up?
There is, because Judge Colon had entered an order that he wanted this issue resolved before any other issue.
No, he didn't, Peter. In fact, what he did, if you look at the order, is he put Ted's removal first. Because we decided in that order, in that hearing, that, why go through with the construction if Ted isn't here? And part of a construction hearing, in my understanding, very limited of Florida law, is that you can have a removal of trustee hearing at that hearing. And that's, obviously...
What order would you be referring to, Elliot?
The order of Colon to have this hearing. He didn't... Whatever day, I'm not looking at it.
Now, are you talking about the Shirley Bernstein or the Ted Bernstein?
I'm saying when he ordered that, Alan Rose file this trust construction, one count limited, all that kind of stuff, there's also that we were having a hearing to remove Ted.
Okay.
And he's blocking that. Look, I get his game. It's very obvious, in fact. It's actually psychotically obvious.
Okay. there's two actions that I'm aware of that are pending, two case numbers there in down here. There's the Shirley Bernstein independent action on her documents.
Filed by Alan.
Private Bernstein action. And so Bill and I are not of record in the Shirley Bernstein matters. So, I have little knowledge as to what happened procedurally in the Shirley Bernstein actions and any of those issues. Unfortunately, we went to court on the Simon Bernstein scheduling matter and ended up with a hearing on the Shirley Bernstein matter.
Again.
I don't quite know how that happened, but... I know virtually nothing about the Shirley Bernstein stuff.
Well, you did to a period because you had an interest in it up to a point, right?
No, I've never been involved in any Shirley Bernstein stuff.
Oh, I thought you guys filed on the Shirley Bernstein Trust.
Never.
Oh, okay.
Never.
It's on her estate?
Our actions to remove Ted have always been... as the successor trustee under the Simon Bernstein Trust, because as Brian O'Connell agrees with me, he is essentially not qualified to be the successor trustee.
And so
that's what we're trying to get heard in the Simon Bernstein stuff before anything else.
Well, they're trying to get rid of me, Peter, before anything else. And so it's obvious what they're trying. They've tried a bunch of dirty tricks here with, trying to get Guardian on me and all kinds of stupid stuff.
Let me just jump in here for a second. I think we may have initially done a filing against Shirley's estate, but we were told by several different sources, including the mediator last year, that the time limit to file against her estate had passed, and we had no right to continue to pursue any action against her estate or trust.
That's what I was referring to.
Yeah, so I think there was actions that were initially
filed.
I don't think anything ever before. We never had any, if I recall, hearings specific to related to Shirley.
If I can just jump in quick, though, because what you would be reminding me of something, which as far as O'Connell goes, but I thought there was something where, like, Elliot had the removal of Ted was going to be like the next item on the list or something with Cole at one point, going back however long that was. And you had thought, Peter, that O'Connell was going to be, coming in to remove Ted. And I'm kind of curious, like, where O'Connell is on that. Since to me, is he supposedly has, like, some response of pleading, an answer that says he's not valid, but I don't see where he filed to remove him, and I'm kind of curious why not. And then I'm also curious, like, if he thinks he's invalid, you know, he seems to have a lot of redacted private conversations with Alan Rose on behalf of a guy that he doesn't think is valid, being Ted Bernstein. So I didn't know if you had any take on all that.
We actually were all in court in front of Judge Colin on a hearing to remove Bernstein. We didn't get finished. Judge Colin got sidetracked. And at that point, Judge Colin then removed himself after that. And he got shipped up to the North Branch. So that actually was teed up at one time. Then it went up to Judge Coates. He recused himself. Then it went over to Judge Phillips. And we had a scheduling conference to set hearings. And we argued that we should hear removal and assignment Bernstein Trust of Ted first. The judge got sidetracked with Shirley Bernstein, and the only thing that got set was, I guess, what's now set for December 15th.
And Peter, Kevin, I think, was referring back to the court hearing where we put in Brian O'Connell, and on that day we also had a hearing scheduled to remove Ted, and that's when you asked me to hold off and let Brian file. And
yeah, Brian made a statement in open court that Ted was not qualified. Now, has he ever followed up with a written motion? I don't think that he has.
Any sense of why not, though? I mean, because it just kind of looks odd from the outside that if he thinks he's not involved and he has the basis for it and he's stated it in the court, then why drag on so long, afterwards? Not like I don't know what the motion would be, but if it's just a motion to remove or a motion to, force the hearing, whatever it is.
Peter already wrote it. Kevin, Peter already wrote the motion and gave it to me, and I was going to have it heard. And then Brian, all he had to do was copy it and put his letterhead on it, unless he wanted to question Peter on his work.
That's right. That's right. And so right now that motion is still pending, and it's not set for hearing, and Brian has not filed. So your question, why hasn't he? I don't have a sense of that.
Okay. Because it looked like he was kind of quiet that day in Phillips when this was all getting, and I wasn't there, so sometimes I understand, there's things going on in the courtroom that you can't pick up from a transcript, right? But, it looked like he was quiet, but in fact it was kind of like his motion that brought it on to be heard that day, or his request for the scheduling, and he seemed a little quiet, like he was taking a back seat to Rose, and that kind of had me concerned, where I'm seeing like all these redacted, billings and, conferences with Rose, when in fact he has already gone on record saying he thinks Ted's invalid. So that just kind of made me say, hey, wait a minute, what's happening there?
Not sure what you're talking about when you say redacted billings.
Oh, well, I don't know if Bill, I thought I sent you the bills that I get, but Brian's bills come with a ton of redaction in them, in particular with conversations with Rose.
Yeah,
So when he submits...
He's having all these conferences and meetings with Rose, and then a lot of things are just blocked out after that. You know, like, he just blocks out whatever supposedly took place. Like, maybe it was an hour-and-a-half call, and he's got Alan Rose's name there, and then you just see a big black mark, you know, next to whatever was supposedly happening. And that just kind of, like, looks strange, you know, you know, if he thought he was invalid, he's been on record that his intent's invalid. You know, boy, he seemed to be doing a lot with Alan Rose afterwards. And then, you know, why didn't he step up on that day in front of Phillips? Because it looked like he was kind of quiet that day.
Right. Well, we had a conversation last week, O'Connell and myself, and also counsel from Chicago. And the estate is going to take over from Bill, the Chicago litigation.
How are we paying for that?
And it's going to be a contingency.
Do they have that document yet?
Yes. Apparently there was supposed to be an actual contingency fee agreement that was supposed to be signed. So, I need to follow up on that this week.
Okay. Back to Phillips, though, you know, as far as I understand what you said when supposedly Colin had this order to say this, you know, has to get done first or whatever it is, but, you know, do you have any reaction in terms of, you know, the way Phillips kind of sketched, because even if that was the thing you were going to handle first, it seemed like there was like really no, he didn't let Elliot talk at all, as far as, you know, how much time do you need, what about discovery, what about witnesses, what about all those other kind of things.
Yeah, and the judge was confused, and then I think he got embarrassed, because he let Alan Rose take him down the road of Shirley Bernstein, and he didn't realize, I don't think till late in the hearing, that the real case was to Simon Bernstein. So the judge was not prepared for the status quo. That became clear, especially upon reviewing the transcript. Okay, so...
Can I go back a second, Peter?
The Shirley Bernstein thing got set, and everything else is still kind of pending.
Right, so, well, as far as the 15th goes, I mean, I don't know if you know about this, but the federal judge, you know, has a status conference like an hour before the Phillips thing is supposed to start. So, I mean, I thought there's still an interest out there that you folks have. Are you going to be part of that status conference, or?
I don't know. I don't have that on my calendar either.
That would be Stamos.
Oh, that would be Stamos?
That would be handling
yeah,
that.
And Stamos is counsel of record up there. But they were supposed to put together a contingency fee agreement, and that should have been done by the end of last week. So I need to follow up on that.
Yeah, and Peter, on that, I think me and Bill just agreed that we wouldn't institute that change until after Ted's removed. Is that correct, Bill?
I'm not instituting anything.
Well, no, but switching from Bill paying to the contingency fee arrangement.
No, I think what we talked about, Elliot, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought we said that I wouldn't file any motions to recover my out-of-pocket expense at this point, because that would have to go through this judge and this court. But it had nothing to do with Stamos determining, and I'm not his client, Brian O'Connell's his client. So my only interest in this was to get the beneficiary, the proceeds paid properly to the beneficiary, which I believe is Simon's estate. And Brian is now taking that up, and Stamos apparently is prepared to do that on a contingency basis.
Absolutely, without question.
that it eliminates, you know, my contributing further.
Can Brian then turn around and turn it off and say I'm done with, you know, I don't want to be represented anymore, I'm canceling this?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Well, I'd like to see the contract. Hopefully they'll be sending it to me, I'm sure, with the absolute no disclosure going on. I may or may not get it. But we'll see.
But then I'm still waiting after at some point, Elliot, to file for reimbursement that's full of records that I would be entitled to if I provided a benefit.
Well, if Brian can't pull out and the contingency stands to the completion of the hearing, that's fine. That just changes the payout.
Actually, he's more free to pull out now.
Okay, that's even better, Peter.
Once the contingency agreement is signed, he's in even deeper.
Okay, good.
So good. I want to follow up with Brian and say, hey, let's go.
Okay.
Get this done. So I will do that. As far, however, with regard to Shirley, Kevin, right? Yeah, other than advising you on procedure and strategy, Bill and I are not really much help to you on the Shirley Bernstein Trust document.
Well, I'd be calling Bill as probably a witness once I can get straightened out the procedural stuff here. But, so, you know, he's going to be a help of that way, I would think.
I mean, if you want me to take a look at that, if Bill, I should say, wants me to take a look at that, I will. But heretofore, I have not at all whatsoever been involved.
No, I know. I'm saying, as this comes to a trial with some normalcy, one of the things I would be doing is calling a few witnesses, and Bill would be one of them. So you're not object to that, do I figure, correct? Bill?
I don't think so. It depends on what you're talking about
there. Well, I'm going to ask you about the qualifications of Ted Bernstein that you're aware of. I'm going to ask you about the documents, signed Shirley, stuff like that, you know.
Okay. Some of the issues for his qualifications under the Shirley Bernstein Trust are different. It's a less strong of a case because I would assume the trust document the Shirley Bernstein Trust does not facially disqualify Ted.
No, I know, but just because he's missed accountings for 3 years should knock him out the door. That's what I'm saying. I don't care what the document. Well, right. You see, the problem is, Peter, I can't have a construction hearing with Ted as the trustee because I'm not getting documents. I'm not getting production from Ted in over 3 years in Shirley that's been requested. You know, there's so much missing here that, you know, and then Ted, if he's not valid, if he doesn't argue the construction one way, his family is entirely cut out. So if he's not successful in arguing the construction of Shirley's trust, he and his family have no interest in it. So that causes a huge conflict, adversity with beneficiaries. He cannot argue these things forward. So, you know, it's all crazy, but, you know how it is with me, Peter.
I think the point Peter was making is that he's not officially in the language of Shirley's trust, presumed to have predeceased her.
Oh, yeah, it is. In Shirley's, it says...
No, because Shirley appoints Ted as a successor trustee.
But she also says predeceased for all purposes of this trust.
Yeah, but the point, Elliot, is that the languages are different. And so, therefore, the argument to remove Ted in the Shirley is much more difficult than it is as to the Simon Trust.
On the document side, but there's 56 other reasons Ted needs to be removed. Failure to disclose documents, being involved in the frauds. I can name them, you know, upside down. I don't care, even if he was properly put in there and that was a legitimate document and proves out to be, the fact remains that as of today he's not valid, and because of the fraud caused by his lawyers, he now stands to be knocked out 100% from the equation. So he can't argue as a trustee while he's got an interest like that, 50% of the estate between his kids and Pam's. They're either in or out based on his being trustee. Well, that conflict removes him automatically, unless Judge Phillips is stepping up for aiding and abetting, which he already has, actually. So, you know, his clock started already. So how far he wants to keep going in this fraud becomes kind of funny, actually, if you think about it, Peter. I mean, you know, if I were Phillips, you know, well, I guess he's already in, like Coates. So they made their bed, and now they're going to rest in it. That's how I look at it. So, you know, if he wants to say, you can't hear this stuff like this, and if you're going to continue the frauds and everybody's going to act fraudulent, and you're going to try all that, it's crazy. I mean, there's just too much coming, and there's so much more lined up. The next wave of documents that we've got from Tesher and Spelina that haven't been submitted to federal investigators yet, I mean, they're dead. They've got insurance frauds. They've got so much trouble coming. I don't know why Phillips is doing anything but saying I should disqualify, because at the fourth DCA, Elliott's already said that I was the intended recipient of Colin's steering.
Because the way the judicial system works is that judges don't do very much, if anything, sui sponte. They respond to motions, and they respond when they are asked to do something. But judges very rarely take it upon themselves on their own to look at a file and do something.
But if he looked at the...
clerks, they don't have the time to do it.
You don't think he looked...
Pending, shut up for a second, I'm talking.
Okay.
If there's something pending in the fourth district, then the appropriate procedure is to move to stay the action pending the appeal in the fourth district, and then bring it before Judge Phillips. But in the absence of a motion asking him to do that, judges won't do that. It has to be brought to their attention.
Well, he's served by the Supreme Court of Florida the document, the all writs. It's right in there.
Doesn't matter.
Well, he didn't read it, saying, you know, should I be handling...
judges don't read things that are filed, ever.
Oh.
Okay? They only read things when there's a motion that says, hey, judge, there's a motion on this, you need to read this. But anything that gets filed, he probably has 1,000 cases. There's no way he reads anything that's filed in a case unless it's pursuant to a motion that's been sent for a hearing that's coming up, and then he'll read everything that is pertinent to that motion. But just because something is filed and it happens to be CC'd him, he doesn't read it. No judge does.
Right. We're kind of going back to the Shirley thing, though. I mean, the way I was looking at the filing, and I think it's Rose or whoever put it in, but really, I mean, there's no way they can do anything without putting Tesher and Spelina on the stand. Now, obviously, you know, they're a little bit compromised, I imagine, at this point, from taking that stand, but, you know, is there an interest, you know, on your side in anything that comes out from Tesher and Spelina? You know, I guess that's... Well, I mean, my question, I had. Or, you know, to the extent, I mean, because obviously they're in bed with Ted, and part of your lawsuit's against Ted, you know, whether they're moving assets, moving this, moving that, I don't know. I mean, it would seem like, you know, at least having some eyes and ears, you know, knowing what's going on in there, I don't know.
I'll go back to what I said at the beginning of the case. We don't think there's a whole lot there that affects the asset picture for Bill. The big thing with Bill is the $1.7 million, whatever that number is, in Chicago. That's the big enchilada for us.
Okay, whether, you know, whether there's personal property that belongs to the estate or Shirley Bernstein, in the grand scheme of things, you're spending dollars to go after pennies.
Right, right. Well, that's assuming that Simon was really broke, right? I mean, but isn't that kind of like really a joke to suggest that, you know, that the guy's estate has nothing in it? I mean, that's why Bill, the other day, you know, we were kind of going, I was trying to remember what you had said, you know, in terms of some of the money that we're moving through that LIC account, just the LIC account alone. I mean, I remember some pretty major numbers, you know, that were out there. So if you haven't gotten the discovery from Ted about where all those monies and accounts and things went, and Ted's in bed with Tessa and Selena up until at least a year ago, I would think there might have been a lot of things happening during that period of time with Tessa and Selena and Ted joined at the hip that might have affected some of those accounts where you'd get recovery from. So that's a little confusing to me. I mean, obviously, you don't spend... I understand what you're saying, Peter, as far as, you know, spending dollars to go after pennies, but the LIC stuff that obviously, you know, Ted was involved with and Scalia was involved with, those aren't pennies. I thought I heard, you know, millions of dollars.
The primary job of marshaling the assets of the estate falls to Brian O'Connell. And before Brian, Tessa's Lena weren't doing it, so we had to step up, at least with regard to the big enchilada, which is the money in Chicago, which is the main asset. We could, Bill could spend tens of thousands of dollars hiring us to do Brian O'Connell's job, and in the end, the result achieved is not worth it because the big one is the insurance money in Chicago.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you could spend the $50,000 in fees tracking down who knows what. That's Brian's job. And surely...
It looks like Brian's been a little slow to the draw, though, and some of that.
Yes, without question. There's no doubt about that. Absolutely correct.
Do you have any sense of why, though? I mean, like, because even that Chris Prindle guy, I mean, Bill and I, we talked about this Chris Prindle guy. It seems like, if nothing else, you know, that guy was at the center of everything. You know, Wachovia, Stanford, Oppenheimer, J.P. Morgan. And just knowing, you know, okay, well, how much was really there and move forward, you know, flow through that. I think O'Connell's never even contacted the guy. I was just curious if you have any sense of why he's so slow to draw on some of this stuff.
This is M.O. I destroyed him in another case they had against him because he's always late getting organized and has too many files and too many, pulled in too many directions.
Well, Peter, he's promised us a big production since the day he got on board that he was going to file that Ben Brown had already pretty much prepared. And he's never sent that either. And, you know, there's just some of these things. He hasn't filed the document you told me he was going to file to remove Ted, which would have solved this all months ago. And now it puts me at risk again, as you know, going into Shirley through this whatever scam fraud that's going on here. I'm just baffled. You know, you brought him in. You haven't asked him, you know, what in God's name we told Elliot to hold off on removing Ted. You were going to file a document. It's, you know, this isn't sitting on something. I wrote the document. It's ready to go. Why haven't you and Brian notified authorities that Ted's not valid, that he's committing a fraud? Let's not call it not valid. Let's call it what it is, a fraud. And we're having a fraud on the court where they're trying to take advantage of me, that's obvious, through this next wave scam, it looks like. But where is Brian O'Connell right here to say I'm accusing Ted of fraud, like we all are, and we'll all chime in that we agree.
Well, you Judge Cullen ruled that Bill does not have standing to remove Ted.
Well, I know, but you brought Brian in. You brought Brian in. You brought Brian in, so you know him. I don't really, from a hole in the wall. And, you know, he was going to do something, and it's so long, and it's cost my kids schools and all kinds of things while I've waited for this to occur, and it hasn't occurred. I figure when you talked to him last week, you said, hey, Brian, why the hell haven't you filed with the police and the courts that this is a fraud and thrown up a red flag that Ted shouldn't be having any hearings and Alan Rose needs to go to jail for supporting this shit? I mean, I don't know. It may not be in your strategies, but I know it's in the ethical codes that when you have evidence of felonies, it's either a misprison of a felony or aiding and abetting a crime if you fail to report it. So by saying Ted's invalid, he's saying, really, Ted's committing a fraud on this court, whether it's Shirley or Cy, it's with guarding the estates of...
Well, there's a difference between civil fraud and criminal fraud.
Okay, call it which one you want. Bring it in as that. There should be...
So Brian,
okay, so, well, he should be reporting it to the police as well. That's one of the authorities that should have been contacted, other than by me. Yeah.
No.
Okay, well, he should have notified the court, hey, this is a fraud. Remove Ted Bernstein based on this immediately.
It's not a fraud. He's improperly qualified. He's not qualified to be a trustee.
That's right. And Alan Rose knows that. Alan Rose knows that. The language knows that. And by doing...
It's not a fraud.
Well, by going and acting when you know you're not qualified, it is a fraud, actually.
How is that?
Well, I would assume that acting in a capacity you can't act in and knowingly doing it is a fraud. But I'm not a legal expert. We're going to find out.
Listen, I gotta go. I calendared this for 30 minutes.
Oh, okay.
And now we're going on 50.
Okay.
Kevin, how can I help you? That's the bottom line. Send me an email and tell me how I can help you. Okay,
fair enough. I appreciate all your feedback, for sure.
Yeah.
Very helpful.
And thank you, Peter and Bill.
And I want to help you guys, but I need more specific instructions if we're going to help you.
Okay.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, guys.
Bye.
Okay, thanks.
All right.